Alright, stop. I thought if we could just start with, alright, now we're working. Today is April the 8th, 2005, and it is Friday. And today I'm visiting with Betty Chardon. I thought if we could start with when you came to Solbury and when you joined St. Philip's. Was. You can just go ahead and get that done. It should work nicely. All right?
Well, my family moved to New Hope in 1948. My daughter Penny was born in 1948. And my daughter and I had polio. And then after that, I was going to Trinity Solbury, and I was part of the group that did the first cookbook for Buck's Cooks. And at that time, Walter Malone was the vicar at both St. Philip's and Trinity. And we had one service, and I think it was about 8:30 in the morning. And then, I don't know the exact year that Walter Malone left to go to Meadowbrook on Washington Lane. He went to that church.
What town was that? Meadowbrook?
Meadowbrook is, that's
Pennsylvania?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And at that time, I said I wanted my letter transferred down to St. Philip's because I lived on Chapel Road within walking distance. So that was when I became a member of St. Philip's. And then the minister that came at that time was LeDrew Stipler. And he lived in Lambertville on Lambert Lane, and the 1955 flood, he needed a place to live. And so, with help from Marshall Cole and Charles Mueller, we bought the chapel house on Chapel Road. And I have a letter here about it. That was in 1981. Now I want you to have that.
Okay.
And the congregation, various members of the congregation, gave money to purchase the chapel house at 10 Chapel Road. And LeDrew Stipler lived there for the time that he was at St. Philip's. And then he retired, and I'm trying to keep things straight for who came when. So we had Dick Finn. We had Dick Finn for a while, and we had Father, well, think of it.
Okay.
And then after he left, we had Father Fox, Bill Fox. Father Fox was the interim minister before we got Larry Seiler. And Larry Seiler was the minister at St. Philip's for 16 years.
I didn't know that.
He lived at the chapel house with his four children and his wife, Kathy. And after he left, we had some fill-in minister with Kyle Sinclair, who was at St. Philip's for 21 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he has recently retired. And now we are looking for a new minister. We've had some very nice people, Beck Inman, and
Ruby.
Father Ruby.
Right.
And who is there at the present time?
In 1948, was gas still in shortage, and it was easier for you to walk than it was to get in the car to drive to Trinity? Was that one of the reasons?
Oh, I wanted the exercise, and I wanted to be, I love St. Philip's. Everybody who is a member of St. Philip's loves the place and loves the type of a congregation that we have.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
What do you remember about any major problems or any major concerns of the chapel or the beaver incident? And then I wanted you to address the beaver incident.
Oh. Well, we had a wonderful women's guild with some very, very special people. Gertrude Walwork, Bertha Cole, Dr. Norton, Marjorie Holmquist, Louise Holmquist, Mary Mead, and Frances Carson.
And yourself.
Well, I just had joined the group, and it was a marvelous group to be part of.
And what did you do?
The women took care of everything that was needed for the church. Bertha Cole was in charge of the altar for many years, and since then Jane King has taken over for her.
Did you raise money? Was it fundraisers? And what kind of fundraisers?
We had card parties. Yvonne Kennedy.
Oh, you had card parties?
We had card parties down at the American Legion.
Oh.
And with gifts on this side, I still have some of the Moravian stars that I bought at one of the card parties.
Oh, I see.
And
did you play bridge or canasta? Or
anybody could play whatever they wanted.
Okay.
I think I played canasta.
Oh, right.
There were bridge players, of course.
Yes.
But
I didn't know that. Yeah. And what else did you do as the Women's Guild? Was it just called St. Philip's Women's Guild?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Did you meet on a monthly basis, or?
Yes, we met every month. And we met in different homes, Janet and Charles Mueller's home.
Right.
Lenton Bowden.
That's right.
And Bertha Cole's home. Mm-hmm. And it really was a great time for St. Philip's.
How long did this organization last, the Women's Guild? Yeah.
It's just been, let's see, Malcolm Lewenhop's wife.
Oh, right, was in that
was
guild.
A member. And she was the treasurer at that time. And I think I may have some of the checkbooks from that.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
And, of course, I've been depositing the church money for more years than I can remember.
That's true.
Yeah. And we've had a group of very devoted women.
You have been, right, yeah. I'm sorry to see that has disbanded, because I wonder what it would take to, I'd never heard of it.
You hadn't.
I didn't know there was such a group.
Oh, no. we had marvelous fundraisers. Aud Wicks, who is one of the local artists, took people on painting tours of Italy. And he would do slides of Italy. And, you know, with a heavy accent on art.
Yes.
And St. Philip's has always been noted for its art and people connected with the church.
Mm-hmm.
St. Philip's has some beautiful working cartoons for stained glass windows by Valentine D'Ogries. And we also have two of his stained glass windows inside the front door of the church.
Oh, that's right.
That's right, yes.
Now, his name was Valentine?
D'Ogries.
D'Ogries.
O-G-R-I-E-S.
Okay.
And leaflet about that.
Right, we do.
And
I got that.
Then we also have the crucifixion that was designed by Georgiana Harbison Godwin. She presented that to the chapel in 1960.
Is that the wooden cross that we have?
That's the crucifixion on the velveteen.
Okay.
And Mrs. Goodwin also designed and worked the altar hangings for the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C.
Good heavens.
She was a member. And then there are other things. Oh, that's wrong. St. Peter the Door Knocker is a bronze original by Charles Harley. It was presented in 1948.
Oh.
See, and this goes with the Phillips Mill Art Group.
Right.
And the altar is hand-carved.
It is.
Yes, by a woman. And it was designed, I'm trying to think.
Was it down here at that Colt? Was it
Oregon Colt, yes.
Designed the altar and its furnishings.
Mm-hmm. The base, oh, no.
Are they the ones that are related to Marilyn Langton?
Yes.
Right.
She married a Godwin. She married a Godwin.
Right, and I don't think I've, and Francine Godwin, and her child, the child of Heather.
Heather.
It's Heather. Heather.
It's Heather.
Woman. That's right.
Yes.
Francine is still at home. We're still living nearby. Mm-hmm. Right. They, they're incredible, very, very bright family. Oh, so there's the Ladies Guild, the Women's Guild of St. Aid cards, and art things from Valentine. What other things did you do?
Before we leave that, I'd like to mention that Isaac Walworth made all the candelabra that were in the church. They were designed by Morgan Colt.
Mm-hmm.
Or in particular...
But you meant monthly? Dues?
I guess
right,
so.
Right, yeah, buddy. And the sole purpose was to take care of the church first, as in the altar guild, any gardens or anything, care of the church, raise money for the church.
Yes. We did a very good job.
I would say so. With all the working mothers and all the working women, you know, it would be hard to start.
That was the main reason we quit.
Because of the change in our social
life. Well, and as everybody grew older and died, Charles Hargens was a local artist, and his wife Marjorie was a member. And there were a lot of very wonderful women.
I bet they were.
Mm-hmm. Of course, Kenny Johnson had been a member all our life. Daughter Brenda Jones is a member today, very active member.
Mm-hmm. From that group, we have Brenda Jones, and we have anybody else?
Well, let's see.
Is Kathy Zeiler a member?
Well, she came much later.
Right.
She was a member for years, and of course she's living back here now. And Jane and Bob King became members, and I don't know exactly when they joined St. Philip's, served as vestrymen for many years.
Just think of the world. There was, of course, John
Charles Kirk. Hargens.
Charles Hargens was, yes.
Yes. He was a vestryman when I joined the church.
Okay.
And then who else did you mention?
John Kirk.
Lloyd Lawrence.
Oh, Lloyd Lawrence was, right.
Lloyd Lawrence. John Kirk, and then now
Tim Philpott, who's doing an excellent job.
Yes, he is.
I think he's really trying very, very hard.
Yes, he is.
True. If we've covered St. Philip's,
I think so.
I'd like to go back and have you tell the dog stories.
Oh dear.
and the dogs that you've had, and the really, because that really reflects life in Soulbury during those years. I mean, that we couldn't live that way today. We couldn't just turn our dog loose. And,
no.
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 Well, and very interesting about dogs, people have always been devoted to their dog.
Mm.
Up in Stockton, there was a dog called Rodney, and he was a basset hound, and he was all over the town, and everybody loved him. And we had, my husband, Felix Chardon, and I had this dog named Sam, and he was a brown, liver-colored Springer Spaniel. And Sam was an escape artist. And I lived my life with all the doors, with latches and hooks and eyes on the door to keep that dog inside. But he would know if somebody strange came into the house and that door was unlatched for 1 minute, and he would go roaming around. And he, 1 year, I think, the police called me about 50 times. This was before you got, well, you had a small fine then.
Right.
And so anyhow, he went to Odette's.
And from here, he went to Odette's? Here,
oh, yes. Oh, yes. And he went to the Prelude. He went to the diner. And at Odette's, a waitress took him home and kept him for 3 days.
Oh.
And my neighbor, she was, the dog was riding in the car with her, and my neighbor said, knew the waitress, and she said, "What have you got Sam Chardon in your car for?" And she said, "Oh, he came to Odette's, and I took him home." And then another early time was when Kathy and Larry Seiler moved into the Chapel House. She said she still remembers seeing Sam there, and he had this sign hung around his neck, "Please don't feed me." And it was raining, and there was Sam looking pathetic. So then another time, he used to go to Soulbury Girls' School.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And my son was about the age of these girls, so they complained that Sam would get in their beds and give them fleas. And I think the top story of the things he did, the toll bridge between New Hope and Lambertville was being worked on and being completed. Sam used to go over and visit with the workmen during their lunch hour, and they would, of course, would feed him. So one day, I got a phone call from my next-door neighbor, who was at the A&P in Lambertville. And she called me, and she said, "Sam is here." And Sam would go in, his weight would open the front door, and he'd go into the meat department, and they would give him some raw hamburger and put him out the back door. Then he would run around. And so with the opening, the event of opening the bridge, Francis Carson, one of our guild members, had a party, and there was a reporter from the New York Times. And Francis was telling this story of the dog being the first thing across the bridge. So he called me, and he wanted to know if it was true. And I said, "Yes, it's true." And I said, that's absolutely right. So he was written up in the New York Times.
Didn't Sam die recently?
No, that was Sambo.
Oh, Sambo died recently.
Sambo died recently.
No, that too was a liver-colored Spaniel.
No, Sambo was black and white. We had
Sambo,
English setters that were black and white.
Right.
We had several of them, and then we didn't want to be without a dog.
No.
So I said, "Well, this time let's go for a black and white Springer Spaniel." So our English setter's name was Bo. So we named the dog Sambo for both of them. That's how he got his name.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, he got old and ill, and we had to have him put to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Presently, I'm without a dog.
Which is unusual.
Yes, it is.
First.
So all my friends bring their dogs to visit.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
I should remember. I would hope that Hoot, the Scotty, would be on his best behavior, but I couldn't, couldn't make sure of that. I want to talk to you about polio.
Oh.
If I could do that, please. Our children have not a clue as to that disease and how it affected everyone. Mm-hmm. And that's why I hate August. Because in our town in Massachusetts, Westfield, polio would strike during that month. Mm. And I would just pray to make it to my birthday on September 1st, as though polio knew that it was September 1st and wouldn't hurt anyone. Mm. But it was a fear that children lived with. There were rumors. You caught it at the movie theater, so then nobody could go to the movies. Or you caught it, remember when they had Coca-Cola in those big coolers with ice? And then you pop the top of the bottle, a bottle of Coke?
No.
Yes, well, they thought that's where it came from. So I think our children don't realize how serious and devastating.
Well, my daughter Joan came down with the polio first. She was affected from the waist down in her legs, and she wore a brace on her leg for many years. Mm-hmm. I came down while Joan was in the hospital. The hospital in use then was Abington.
Doylestown wasn't built then?
Doylestown was a
small... Oh, that was that little funny hospital, that like a big house.
No, it was... Doylestown was on Belmont Avenue.
Right, oh, okay.
Yeah, the one before the church, hospital is now.
Mm-hmm.
But I came down with polio, but I had the type that affected your throat and your face. My face was right side was paralyzed. My arm was affected. I didn't know
your
that.
Right arm?
My right arm was affected. I wore a brace on that for a good year. And I did exercises. And at that time, nobody knew how you got it. So we had a big quarantine on our house.
Ooh.
And I was in the house on Chapel Road overnight before I went off to the hospital.
Mm.
And a friend of ours moved us. And I just stayed away so there would be no possible contact with me. So we were building the house during this time. And at that time, in 1949, Chapel Road was a dirt road.
Oh.
And they paved it while I was in the hospital.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So Joan and I were there in the hospital for about a month.
Mm.
And then...
Were you together in the hospital?
No, she didn't know I was there.
She didn't know
I was there. She was,
how old was she?
She was 3 1/2.
Oh, bless her heart.
Yeah. And so I came home, and the doctor said if I had a live-in maid and someone who could take care of Joan, that I could come home, and then she could come home after that. And I also had a one-year-old child who had been up with my husband's mother for the time. So Felix went to get her and bring her back. And so that's the way we existed for the next year.
And when did David come? David's?
David was born 10 years after Joan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
David was born 10 years after
Joan. He was born during the 1955 flood.
Oh, would you like to tell me about that?
Well, you know, Diane, Connie and Diane, and I went to the hospital for this third child, and if it had been a girl, I was going to name it either Connie or Diane, but it turned out to be David.
Oh, Connie or Diane, after the hurricanes.
After the
hurricanes. The hurricanes that caused the flood. So it was during, the flood.
So I never saw the flood in New Hope.
No.
I just saw pictures of it.
Right.
And so now here we are again at having another flood.
It's awful. Daughter Peggy lives in Stockton, you know. And as you cross the bridge, you come to the post office, and on the right-hand side is Mill Street. And there were little houses that had been condemned. The haves and the have-nots. And
sure.
It wasn't as bad as 55 because Dickie Phillips' wine store did not get damaged this time. Mm. Although he, when the flood was coming on that Saturday, or Friday or Saturday, vans come and load all the wine.
Well, that's wonderful.
Because he's got a huge inventory of very expensive wines.
Well, I think people were more prepared this time. But still, a lot of people, Lambert Lane was flooded again. And one of our members, Betty Lancaster, lives there on Lambert Lane.
That's true. How did she make out? Do we know?
We don't really know. Her basement had water.
Right.
But she was in Florida.
Is she still there with Mary Martin?
Well, I think they should be back by now. We'll find out on Sunday.
Right, we will.
Yeah.
We'll find out what happened to them. I knew they were going to Florida, and I knew that they had rented.
Mm-hmm.
Betty Lancaster, Mary Martin, Ann Serrero.
Ann Serrero went on a cruise with them.
Oh, went on the cruise.
She didn't go.
No. Florida. No. Well, that was very nice, but I've been to Betty Lancaster's house. It's a lovely house.
Mm.
And it seems to set high from the river.
Mm-hmm.
But when you looked at the enormity, the size, the wideness of that river, it was frightening.
They were built after the 1955 flood.
That's right.
So they took into consideration.
It used to be called River's Edge, and it was run by Stella Dallas.
And with one of our favorite restaurants, we were there often.
It was wonderful. Yes.
And there was an atrium in the center with these cages of white doves. Remember that?
Boy, I barely remember that. Did you know that Stella Dallas was a member of the John Birch Society?
No.
And that when Jerry Grant called to make reservations, and he was from Mississippi.
Oh.
And he had a southern accent.
Oh, there.
And she said, I don't know, you just come by, I'll see if I can seat you.
Oh.
And Jerry Grant hung up the phone and said, that's the oddest call. He said, I'm making reservations 2 weeks. This must be a fabulous restaurant. Because I'm making reservations 2 weeks
in advance.
If he was
black, she would have shut the door.
That's right. And so he said she greeted him with his red hair. Oh, you're Jerry Grant. Why, all means, just come in this way. We took Max Scott from Cold Spring Bleachery.
Uh-huh.
Now, that was all part of Bertha Cole,
mm-hmm.
that whole thing down in Yardley, mm-hmm. Cold Spring Bleachery.
Yes.
And we took Max Scott and his wife out for dinner, and he noted this thing that has happened, and he was telling Max Scott and his wife, and he said, oh, she's a member of the John Birch Society, you know.
Well, for many years, we got material from the Cold Springs Bleachery.
Yes.
Through Marshall and
Bertha
Cole, and we sold some wonderful material there.
There was they were a mercerizing operation,
mm-hmm.
and we, Grant Chemical, sold them a tank wagon of liquid caustic soda every single
day. Oh, my heavens.
It was just like 1,000 gallons came in, 3,000 gallons was used, put in the river, and that's it. They put in a waste treatment plant, $1.5 million, it just kept getting worse, and then they closed the bleachery. I can't.
Mm-hmm.
It's horrible. After they put all that money in for waste treatment, because suddenly the imports from Japan and and were foreign imports. They couldn't stay in business. Anyway, that was that. So we've talked about polio, did ever learn how one got it? Bacteria, because it can't be a virus, because we now have vaccines.
Yeah. At that time, one of my friends, you're not talking about knowing about it, but one of my husband's friend's wife came down, and she said, "Oh, aren't you lucky to have a live-in maid?" And I said to her, "Bite your tongue and go home and take care of your children so they don't catch polio."
Right. Oh, right.
I did not have...
It was, what was your maid's name?
Oh, there were two.
Oh, yes, was there?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Were they good or were they, low?
Well, the first one sort of drove me crazy.
Oh.
And the second one was very good.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
And how long were they with you?
A year.
1 year?
1 year. Yeah. And all I wanted to do was get to be able to take care of my own home.
Right.
My husband used to cook every weekend. And every weekend, we ate the same thing. We had pot roast and peas and mashed potatoes every weekend.
Well, that's... Now, I have to ask you, do you cook pot roast and peas and mashed potatoes today? Sometimes.
Sometimes, yes. Yeah. Oh, yes.
Right?
Yes. I was grateful to get it.
Yes. So when you had your arm in a... Was it sling?
It was an airplane splint, and your arm was held up like that.
Oh, my stars.
And the brace...
Betty's holding her head.
The brace went down here. And
down
her
side.
And you had a strap around here and a strap around here.
Right.
It moved. But see, it was keeping it stretched.
I see, because the ligaments are shortened the arm?
Mm-hmm.
Ah. Yeah. Were there other children in the town that got it?
The Kinsey family that lived at Phillips Mill had a son who was in the Abington Hospital at the same time. He was in an iron lung.
Oh.
And he died next to Joan. And I was worried about her knowing what was going on.
Mm.
But she was 3 and a half.
Right. Mm. Right, so they don't...
Mm. Oh, Clyde Lever.
Oh, did Clyde?
Clyde Lever
right.
had polio, yeah.
And he was a justice, he was a young child then. Yeah.
Well, I don't know how old he was when he had it, but it was around that same time.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well respected.
Yes.
And well loved, and didn't have any tolerance for healthy, able-bodied young people getting into trouble.
Yes.
We knew that. You didn't mess around.
Mm-hmm.
Because tell a little bit about the beaver and the beaver story.
Okay. It was a very interesting time.
And do you know about the year it was?
Oh, Lord.
No, let's just think. Was it like 81 or 2?
Brenda Jones would remember the time.
Okay.
Much more than I do.
I'll find out.
But my husband was a hunter and a fisherman and all. And back along this PE route, here was this pile of sticks, is what it looked like, at the side. Near a culvert that went through.
Oh.
And my husband looked at that and said, "Oh, that can't be a beaver hut. They build out in the middle of a place."
That's right.
With marshy wetlands is what it was.
Right.
And after the beaver, then it was dammed up. And so they were fun to watch, and the entire neighborhood would go out there mostly around dusk. And when the beavers would be so active, and they'd come up and swim around and get sticks to add to their hut.
Oh, right.
And they gnawed down a number of trees. And so anyhow, they would slap the water with their tail.
Yes.
And as I said, the whole neighborhood walked back and sort of congregated there. Brenda Jones had a boat and she would row out, and the beavers knew her.
Oh.
And they would come to her. And there was a crabapple tree, and beavers like crabapples. Mm-hmm. So the beavers ate the crabapples. And really and truly, it was a very nice neighborly thing. Everybody knew everybody else.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, the TV news got wind of this, and Dan Quillar came out.
Oh, Dan? Oh, yes.
Yeah, because there was a lot of discussion, because certain people would come and destroy the beavers' dam that they made.
Right.
And, of course, Brenda defended the beaver.
I see.
And, you know, with Mother Nature. Well, then when the TV guy was there,
yes,
there were more than 100 people who had never been there before, but you know, just thanks to television,
yes,
they all came out.
Oh yes, right.
And everybody was taking sides.
Oh, that's right.
And then after the beavers built that house, they built another dam down between Hotel Du Village and St. Philip's.
And is that the one that just that ruined the...
That's
flooded
the
basement and flooded the furnace? It
didn't flood it that bad.
It's got to get a new furnace.
They did, yeah, well, they did put in a sump pump that is there working to this day.
Right,
yeah,
right.
So...
Now, was it true that, I think, Diane
Washburn's
husband?
And her husband. Mm-hmm.
And did he get thrown in jail for destroying the...
I do not know that for sure.
I had heard that was, you know...
Yeah.
By the light of the full moon, he went out with an axe.
Yeah. Well,
or so the local legend is.
Yeah, well,
you know,
he did.
And was arrested for destroying it. So that the town was divided, wasn't
it? Oh, very definitely.
Save the beaver and kill the beaver.
Yes, yes.
And then there was the pickup sign, the pickup truck that had the bumper sticker that said, beaver tastes just like chicken.
Oh, no, I never knew that. Oh, dear. I don't think I'd want to eat a beaver.
I don't think I would want to eat a beaver. No. But they're rodents, aren't they? That's right, because they have teeth.
Well, so are squirrels.
Oh, I know that, as I look at this one out here. Right, yeah. So that was the end. So then what happened? Did the beavers die of old age? Or?
No, they just moved on.
They just moved
on. When they have little beavers, the beavers are there a certain length of time, and then they move on and build their own place.
Oh, I see.
And then, you know, that stream goes under the canal and into the river eventually.
It's Primrose?
Primrose Creek, yeah.
Right, it's Primrose. I just learned that when the stream goes under the canal, it's called a water bridge.
Oh.
Or the canal. That's the term.
Oh.
And that's really a great engineering feat, because they have to have big concrete. It's a water bridge. It's like a big thing. You know, water goes up.
Yeah. Well, the last beavers that I knew of were down by the Thompson Neely House in the canal there.
Well, I saw one at Odette's. We were having dinner in that back room, and I was with Reg.
Oh, no.
And the beaver was in the canal.
Yeah.
And all he was, I had no idea how big they were.
Oh, yeah.
They're big animals.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they were like a groundhog with a flat tail, but they're much bigger than a groundhog. At least this guy was.
Yeah.
And all he did was move sticks.
Yeah.
And he just moved sticks here and put it down and some more sticks. Then he'd forget this and he'd move the stick back over here.
Yeah.
And he just moved sticks.
Well, he was working away towards
building
a little dam.
Building a dam.
Yeah.
Amazing things, aren't they?
Well, and the beavers haven't been back.
No, they haven't been back.
In fact, I don't know, you know, you never see the road or you never hear of complaining.
No, they don't get out on their own.
They don't.
No.
No, because they stay.
No, they're a water animal.
I think I did. Let me just see. No, I think I did. Well, so let's see what we can do here. Okay, we're going to record again. I want to learn about building this house, and of course, television hadn't been for homes yet. Yeah. So you would go where to watch TV?
We'd go over to a friend's to watch TV, and they had one of the early sets, and they were much, much smaller. So they had this screen that had oil in it that magnified the TV picture.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. Yeah. Oh, did you go and watch the Ed Sullivan Show?
Oh,
and
that, of course.
Oh, yes. And
did you never missed that.
You never, Toast of the Town?
And Uncle Milton.
Oh, the Milton Berle Show.
Yeah.
With Imogene Coca.
Yes. No, that was Sid Caesar.
Oh, Sid Caesar and Imogene Coca.
Imogene Coca.
Milton Berle had...
He was for Texaco.
Oh, that's right. Right.
He was a clown. He always did crazy stunts. Dressed up like crazy all his life.
Yes. Yeah. Hilarious.
Yes.
Now, usually in Massachusetts, we'd have to go watch, the Sunday night Toast of the Town. But neighbors were invited to the Ensign House because they had the television set. And ladies brought covered dishes.
Oh, yes.
You always brought food and things and sat around and watched.
And women wore long dresses.
Women wore long dresses?
Yes. Yes. I still have some of my long dresses. Saturday and Sunday nights, you always dressed up on a weekend.
Were they called hostess dresses or?
No.
Just a long dress.
Long dress. Always, you entertained at home.
You did, right?
You did. Of course, I did because I'd been sick.
Right.
You know.
Right.
But you did entertain.
Oh, when Grandma and Papa were alive, they would not miss the Lawrence Welk Show.
Oh, my mother and father loved it. My mother did, not my father.
They would dress up in their little apartment in East Hartford, They would dress up as though Lawrence could see them. I don't know what it was, but they would dress up and sing along and wait and have their little TV tables. I mean, they were in their 90s by then, but they would just live, for Lawrence Welk.
Yeah.
And if one of them, they read the gossip columns, and if one of them was getting a divorce, grandmother would look, now you see, he looks very sad. He really doesn't want to divorce that girl. He really doesn't. Now, something is going on that we don't know about, but I think, and then it would start. Yeah. You would just get involved in their lives. Yeah. That's right. That is right. That oil thing in front of the sink. If you were at the spring, they've got a big hill there on both sides, so reception must have been.
No, they were at the top. They were up in Deer Park.
Oh, that's right.
They were up high.
So they got a good signal. Was it from New York or Philadelphia?
I don't know. That's a long time ago.
I know. I don't know. Remember what year it was? It
had to be around the 50s because after when Joan and I were here and we didn't go anywhere, then we bought a TV set. And all the neighborhood kids used to come watch our TV set.
Yes.
Yeah.
All of them. And they would be the Howdy Doody Show.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, and the Walt Disney Show.
Oh, it was the Mouseketeers.
Yes. The kids had their mouse ears.
That's right, they had their mouse ears.
They I think put our them son, on and watch.
That's right, the oldest son was madly in love with Annette Funicello, just absolutely in love with her. You know, he'd just go, oh, he was like 10. You know, when they would zero in on her face and sing M-I-C-K-E-Y.
Oh, yes.
Oh, it was wonderful. Oh, we're done.
Okay.
I think we're done. I think it's okay. So we're going to do like...